So today's August 5th, 2014. We're at the Northway Tribal Offices with Tom Teasdale. Thank you, Tom.
Okay.
And Barbara Solarius, and I'm Leslie McCartney. And so, Tom, we're here to talk about just life in the village and you coming up. So do you want to start off with where you're from?
I was born and raised in Montana and joined the military in high school. Completed high school on active duty, stayed there for 24 years. Got out, retired from the military in Alabama and then drove up here because the military never sent me up here, so I took my retirement move up here and got here at midnight, New Year's Eve, 1979.
Right in Northway?
In Northway, yeah.
And why did you pick Northway?
I was pastoring a church in Alabama, and they said they're going to close this church by the end of the year if there's no pastor there, and I said, I'll be there.
So you came up to be the pastor, actually,
yeah,
for the church?
Yeah, I came up to be the pastor, yeah. And then, well, the interesting thing was when I hung up the phone, I told my wife we're going to Northway, Alaska, and she says, where is that? I says, where is that? I didn't ask them. I had to go back in the military base and find a map that had Northway on it, so I knew where it was.
Right. So your wife came up with you?
Yeah, I had brought my wife and four of our kids.
And how old were the children then when you came up?
They were all in high school. Uh-huh. One in eighth grade and three in high school.
So was there a high school here for the kids
yes,
when you came?
Yes, well, high school. At that time, the high school had, 1980, had 221 kids in it.
Yeah, so let's just clarify, what year was that that you came
1980.
Up? 1980. Yeah. So there's over 200 kids in high school.
There's over 200 kids. Oh, no, there was 200 kids in the school itself. And the school was from kindergarten through 12th grade.
Okay.
So, I don't remember exactly how many were in each high school or elementary, but we had 221 kids.
Right. And today?
Today, we're hoping we have 36.
Wow.
I think we're going to be in the 30s. It's getting scary.
Right. And is the church still open, or are you still the pastor of the church?
We're still pastoring the church.
And working here at the tribal?
And I work here at the tribal office for about 3 years now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As the conservation coordinator and helping Chad learn the environmental work.
Hmm.
And that's really interesting because I don't know much about the environmental stuff either.
Right.
But we plug along. There's all kinds of experts we can talk to. They come out and visit with us, so we're learning.
Right. And what does that entail then?
Well, the whole thing got started because the military is out here with 4,500 soldiers during World War II.
In Northway.
In Northway. And they had the airstrip here, and it was a airplane transfer place from, I guess, from U.S. to Russia on that Lend-Lease program, whatever they called it.
Right.
And so the military was here. Well, then they left around 45, 46. Well, then we decided to clean the place up. So we got an IGAP grant and been working to clean it up. The interesting thing is we've got 641 civilian vehicles and one military vehicle.
So the military didn't have to clean it up when they left?
The military, I've got a lot of records saying people come out here and cleaned up different things and it was okay. But in the springtime, 55-gallon drums still float up in the water. Most of the vehicles we found are abandoned construction equipment, maybe from the highway or from building the airstrip. Civilians that went up and down the road and their vehicles broke down for some reason. They caught a bus or took off and just left them there.
Right.
And I think we found another vehicle squashed up in the trees. But, we just found out this morning, we've got roughly 360,000 pounds of scrap metal has been shifted out of here, transported out of here. And that was frames, fenders, some type of exercise machine, theater seats, scrap metal from all kinds of junk.
Gosh. What about any toxins like petroleum that's gone into the ground or anything from those vehicles' oil?
We've been getting checked out by different water people every year, and they said last year that the water's actually getting better.
Hmm.
But my big concern is people had stored batteries out here.
Mm-hmm.
They just threw them out in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize the impact it would have, but I went to the council meeting and I said, I found all these batteries in the woods with grass growing on them. And people, you know, who cares? It's just old stuff. Well, I said, but the problem is the rabbit eats the grass. That's full of battery acid, and you guys are eating the rabbit. Well, since then, we've had a whole change of thought here, and we've been cleaning up really good.
So has anybody done any testing on the rabbits or on
no,
food? Or?
Actually, the fish were tested and came out good.
Okay.
Whitefish?
Yeah, whitefish. Mm-hmm. I don't think they tested any pike. I think it was all whitefish. And the soil samples, the water out of the soil has gotten better. And the interesting thing there is that one of the most contaminated areas, yeah. And that was up by the airport. And they said the water's getting better, so that's good.
Right. Huh. And what about town itself then? Contamination. The airport's 2 miles away from town, right?
Yeah, we really haven't had this checked yet.
Okay.
As such, but we're on a water haul system.
Mm-hmm.
We got a new well down there, and we got a 40,000 gallon water tank, and the water is delivered to everybody twice a week.
So each home has a holding tank?
Each house in the program has a holding tank, anywhere from 150 to 500 gallons.
And then the pump out's twice a week too?
And then the pump out is twice a week.
Right, and where's that dumped?
It's dumped at a lagoon that's over by our current landfill.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh. And how long has the hauling water pumping in and pumping out been going on then?
It's been going on, I think this summer was 11 years.
Oh.
So it's really worked out good. But my concern now is not the water coming out of the ground. It's the water that's been sitting in the tank, that's been going into the truck, that's sitting in the people's houses,
right.
To include my own. And
do you do scrub out of tanks every year?
No. Hey, Chad, will you hand me that glass thing with the... Yeah, there. Yeah. Okay. This guy cleans his tank out every year. And he cleaned it out and brought this down to me. And this is the last couple of scoops out of his water tank.
Right.
Okay, most of us have not cleaned our tanks out in 11 years.
You don't have an annual scrub-out program
nope.
then?
No, and nor did we have a maintenance program.
Right.
And so I've been trying to develop that thing a little bit. But if this came out of his tank, who he cleans it every year, what's in the rest of ours?
So the water that you're pumping, where are you getting your water to pump in?
Okay, the water that pumps in comes out of the holding tank here in the village.
But you have
tons of water. That's the well.
Yeah. Now so that's tested every month.
And does it go through a filtration process to try?
Not that I know.
Okay. Right.
And now some of the houses have put filters in their houses.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm concerned also still about the truck and the tanks that aren't getting cleaned.
And do people use that as their drinking water too then?
Most everybody's using bottled water.
Right.
But some do the other.
Right, yeah.
So, but that would scare anybody.
And so that's been 11 years. So
yeah.
Before that, what was the drinking
water? We still had the well. We had a second well, the first well down at the village, and then you'd go with your 5 gallon jugs and get water.
So you hauled your own.
Yeah, you hauled your own water, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Hmm. So
describe a bit of what it was like when you first drove into Northway.
I left Alabama at 60 some above. And it was 58 below when I got here. And all my kids were mad at me because we moved.
And your wife's still married to you?
Yep. Yeah, in fact, the ninth, we've been married 56 years.
Oh, wonderful.
But anyway, we came up with four kids. And I had been living down, I'd been in Georgia for 3 years and Alabama for 7 years and kind of lost the knack of living in winter. Well, when we moved up here, we moved into a 10 by 50 foot trailer from a 3,000 square foot home with a swimming pool. See, so it was a tremendous change. The kids had never been in cold weather.
Mm.
So we got used to that. And it was a fun trip, even though they all moved and won't come back.
They're all living elsewhere now?
I've got one girl, we only brought four with us, but I've got a girl in Alabama, a boy in Texas, a girl in Wyoming, a girl in Montana, had a girl in Florida, and three boys here. That may add up to nine.
Mm-hmm.
Or I might have missed somebody somewhere. But we had five adopted, five of our own, four adopted.
Right, in from the village?
Three from the village and one from Washington.
Oh.
So, but anyway, the three boys are still here.
Mm-hmm.
That we adopted from here, and all the others are spread out doing their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And In fact, one girl just came up last 2 weeks ago and visited us, and she's still upset.
So when you got here, was the church quite thriving then, Tom?
We had about, I'd say 35, 40 people. Mm-hmm. And then most of the elders, of course, have passed on. And we're still hanging in there during the wintertime, about 35, 40 people, maybe 50 sometimes.
Can you tell us what elders were here when you first moved here?
There was Walter and Lillian Northway. Mm-hmm. There was Ina Albert, Frank Sam, I forgot her first name, his wife. And I can't remember all of them. But there was 12 people over 100 years old when I got here.
Wow.
And I think what it was two things. When you lived out here in this type of climate, you better work to stay warm, for one thing, and you're eating all the stuff off the land for mm-hmm. the other thing. You're not eating, drinking beer and whiskey, and you're not eating pizza and all that junk.
Right.
And between those two things, I think that's why they live so long. So, now our age group is, we got 5 or 6 people in their 80s right now, and then let's say from 70 on down, it's getting shaky.
Mm-hmm. So these elders, the oldest elders, were they still going out on the land when you came here, or were they?
They were basically going out, but they weren't doing anything. They were
right.
just because they liked to go. They go out with the people and just kind of be a participant of it. They
yeah.
went to culture camp
mm-hmm.
where they could take the boat down, and they had little cabins out there for them. And then they'd go out to a caribou or a moose hunt and just watch.
Right.
But they didn't physically or could keep up with anybody, so they just watch.
Right, and give advice probably.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And then we got Ada Gallen, who is 91 December. I think she's the oldest one here now.
Mm-hmm.
And we got Oscar Jimmy, mm-hmm. 80s. Roy Sam, Ava Sam in her 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's 2 or 3 more.
We talked to Louis Frank yesterday.
Yeah, Louis. Mm-hmm. Okay, Louis, Steve, and Harry, 3 brothers. All I think Louis's probably the youngest.
It seems like
that. I think he's close to 80 or 80.
Mm-hmm.
I think all 3 of those boys are in their 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And still driving. Well, Steve and Louis are. Harry was hurt as a kid and has been kind of crippled since then, so he doesn't drive.
So did any of these people ever talk about where they went on the landscape? Have you been out with them on any trails?
No,
or anything?
I don't.
You don't do that?
No, I don't go out. And,
right.
I had enough of the woods and different things in the Army. So, but one interesting thing, there's 2 interesting things. We used to have all kinds of dog mushers, and they'd go out and hunt and fish. Now, I don't think we got anybody in the dog mushing business.
Not even for racing?
Nope.
Really?
It's too expensive for one thing. And then the other thing is, where our real trappers are down to about 2 or 3.
Mm.
Whereas before, there was half the place out there trapping. And it's due to age and television.
And is it also due to fur prices being so far down too?
No.
I don't know.
We just don't have the folks. The younger generation coming up, let's say from 30 on down, are more interested in video games.
They're just not mm-hmm. getting started.
And getting drunk,
right.
Things like that. They're just not getting rid of it.
Right.
But they're not all that. We've got a lot of kids, that surprised me, moved to Fairbanks and Anchorage that are doing very well.
Mm.
And they got a girlfriend or a wife, they got a family, they got a house, and they're really doing. We got one boy that's been 10 years on the Anchorage Police Force. Mm-hmm. We got another boy that was a state arson inspector.
Wow.
Got a lot of guys and women that are in their construction field. And it seems like when they break the connection here, they do well.
Move on with
yeah,
their
they move on.
Careers.
And you go from a place right now about 170 to 400,000. It's really surprising that they're doing very well.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And there's just not the opportunities here for the younger people to stay.
There's nothing here anymore.
Right.
The airport's closed. Well, you can wait 20 years for somebody to retire DOT, and if they hire somebody else, you got to wait another 20 years. See, so that's between a school, which requires college, and DOT, which requires CDL and different heavy equipment skills. Yeah, certification. Yeah. There's nothing else here.
Right. And are people also moving away now for education purposes so their kids can be in bigger schools?
A few. Here's another interesting thing. We have a girl that was, the father was not home, and she has several brothers and sisters, kind of a loose life in the house. And she had made up her mind somewhere in grade school she wanted to make something out of herself. She finished number one in her class here in, at school until she left her. She went to Mount Edgecombe, and she finished number one in the class down there and got accepted to a medical school down in Oregon. And she was up this summer visiting, and I said, "You found a boyfriend yet?" She says, "Nope, I'm interested in education first, and then I'll get me a boyfriend." Now, and I often wonder why, coming from the background she had and living, what made her so different than everybody else?
Yeah.
We've got a lot of kids that went on to college, and we've got two extremely good mechanics out here who both went to Votech. One works for DOT, and the other is kind of a self-employed guy. He's one of the village maintenance people. So the opportunity's there. Most of the funds are there, just getting them there.
So you talked about the transition from sort of, there used to be a lot of people who were mushing, had dog teams use them for hunting and trapping and that kind of thing. Are there other changes that you've seen in the time that you've lived here?
Well, the big change we mentioned before was that the road was dirt. And now it's paved. And then...
And just for the purposes of the recording, we were talking about the road is 9 miles from
the highway
here.
Yeah, from the junction to the village. They have moved the Alaska Highway in a little bit. Not, it's not so close. It's just maybe 100, 200 feet. But it used to be 60 miles to Tok. And because of the work on the highway, now it's only 50 miles. I can't wait until they do some more work. It's only 5 miles.
But imagine when it was dirt, it took quite a long time.
Yeah, well, the problem was when it rained, it was terrible. And you couldn't hardly get up and down the road. And then when they did the road, it's been seven, eight years ago now, it flooded.
And you said that they actually tarmacked the road back. It was already done in the 80s when you arrived. It wasn't
the, it was dirt in the 80s.
It was dirt in the 80s.
Yeah, and then sometime in the, after the 90s, it got had some chip seal on it.
Right.
But what happened was we had a big rain, and then with the snow, everything from the big bridge, which is about a quarter mile from the junction, from the big bridge down this way, about 2 miles, the whole road was underwater. You couldn't even drive it, so they hired boats to take people back and forth. Well, it was nice to take the boat up to the highway, but if your car wasn't there waiting for you,
what do you do?
You're still walking. So what they did was they redid the road. They raised the road up 4 feet in some areas, and then they put culverts in there. So the river water, when it comes up again, passes through the culverts and goes into the flatland. And everything is covered with water, but it's not flooding anything. And the other things that have happened is the school has went from 221 to 36. And in fact, I think this year, the kids were telling me we'll have nobody in high school. And we had one graduate last year, and we'll have zero this year.
Is it because there aren't any kids of that age, or are they going somewhere else?
Well, we can't offer anything anymore. When we first got here, the school had home ec, they had music, they had mechanics and carpentry. Now, and we had two basketball teams, boys and girls teams. Now we have nothing. And the kids are interested in basketball, they're interested in playing sports, they're interested in different
vocational,
Votech, not just sitting there with their books.
Right.
And so that's a big change there. And our staff was went from 10 or 12 down to 4.
And is it higher to retain staff then when it's that small?
No, because what happened was one lady has her own home here, and so she's staying. She's about to retire, and then we had we built a duplex for the two of the teachers, and we had an apartment in the school, and they built another. Well, they got a home off of FAA, and bought that and made that the principal's house. So we've added in housing for them. So if we get other people from outside here, they got a place to live.
Makes it easier.
Yeah.
Makes it easier to retain
stock. Yeah, and so that way, of course, Becky married a fella here, so she's been here. She was here. She was a counselor when I got here, I believe. No, she was a student. In 91, she was a counselor and then was going to school through correspondence
mm-hmm.
and became a teacher. So she's been here for whatever they got married, probably in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And then that our staff generally liked it. A lot of bought property and stayed here.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were here like 8, 10, 12 years. And now we're down to where we don't retain as people like we used to.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, but if your student numbers are dropping, that's probably affecting how much money the school has and how many teachers they can have.
See, our principal retired last year,
mm-hmm.
so we're getting Dot Lake closed because they didn't have enough students. So that principal's coming over here. And then we had Becky, who's been here 20 years probably. Ruth, who's been here, I think this is her third year. We got another new teacher coming in this year. And, the principal teacher, yeah.
So that's four.
Of our long-term people, longest would be Becky, around 20 years, and then 3 years.
Right. And so the principal also teaches?
The principal teaches, he's principal half a day and teaches science and math.
Right.
And he lives in Tok. See, so basically, you kind of consider he's really not a community member. He just works here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So.
And what about medical?
Medical, if it's a real serious case, they'll fly in and get you.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we have an ambulance service. We have a health aide.
Okay.
And we have a volunteer health aide.
And the health aide's always here?
Pretty much.
Okay.
And we have an ambulance. So the health aide drives the ambulance partway to Tok. They've already coordinated with Tok Clinic.
And they come out.
And they come out wherever they meet on the highway. The drivers of the ambulance get out and stop the traffic. They switch you from one ambulance to the other, and then you both go your own direction.
Right.
And then if need be, if you get to Tok, they'll either take you by the ambulance to Fairbanks if you need to go there, or they'll fly you out, depending on how serious it is. So.
And Barbara, we were talking this morning about, was there still fire brigades?
Is there a volunteer fire department?
No. We've got 5 fire trucks and no fire department. That's another funny story.
Tell us.
Every house we had that caught on fire burned down. The lodge, several years ago, the grandson was playing upstairs with matches and caught the mattress on fire in the apartment area. And usually people come to a fire and watch it, and there's 2 or 3 guys putting it out. Well, with the lodge on fire on the top, the lodge caught on fire.
Is that here in the village?
Yeah, that's the one at the airport. That's the one at the airport.
Okay.
And so about 30 guys show up, and they're fighting the fire. Everybody else is there watching, and then we had the fire truck shooting the water out, and the water truck was bringing water up to the fire truck. I'm thinking, man, we've never had this great success at all. And then we finally up with the motto was, save the liquor store. So funny. And we did. We saved the whole building. And it was in good shape, too. They were able to just put the fire upstairs, repainted everything. It was fine, but we saved the liquor store, so that was good.
Is this now a dry community, or is there
No, we have. They just have their own bar up on the highway.
Oh, yeah.
And they have a liquor store at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
So... But everybody else, Dave Stout, 1260, mile post 1260 Lodge, and Wrangleview have all been abandoned.
Mm.
None of those are open. Now the natives took over Wrangleview, and EPA shut it down because it was so contaminated, but we're working on that. That's part of our recycling
program.
That's
the gas station that's about a mile up the road.
And contaminated with chemicals, you mean?
Oil and gas.
Leaking underground storage tanks.
Yeah.
Right.
And things like that. We found, in fact, we found 2 10,000-gallon tanks that nobody even knew we were up there, off in the trees. And we found, so we got, I think we got 2 20,000-gallon tanks, 2 10,000-gallon tanks, and we found 4 or 5 500-gallon tanks, and maybe 1 or 2 100-gallon tanks, just laying out there in the woods. Well, one of the 10,000-gallon tanks still has something sloshing around in there. But they've been there at least 20 years. So what I'm thinking is, has the bottom rusted out, mm-hmm. and that's slowly dripping? Well, if it's slowly dripping, we got 20,000 or 10,000 pounds of diesel down in the ground. Mm-hmm. So we pull out 200 cars from there, and the cars from the 50s, of all the crazy things, they'd block them up, and then we drain the oils and the fuel out. We had four cars from the 50s still had a full tank of gas in it. Nobody'd bothered it. But we had all these other vehicles with nothing in there, so did that seep down to the ground also? So once we get this mess cleaned up, we'll start checking the ground.
Right.
Now, interesting happened. It didn't affect the highway, but when you turn, go to the junction, turn right, between the junction and Wrangleview, about a half mile up, the ground gave way and slid down into the river. Hmm. And they were able to test it, and they knew that where it slid away, that was the water that ended in the river. Now, with Wrangleview, I'm wondering, is that fuel, if there is fuel seeping down in there, is it going down the river too?
Right.
See? Because the case is that the gravel gave way and slid down the river. Why isn't the fuel draining down that way?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
And then how will they clean up the chemicals in the ground? They'll have to actually remove
I guess all we'd have, I can't remember what year it was. It was in the 90s, I believe, late 90s. Up by the baseball field, you can see where we've been digging, cleaning that mm-hmm. up. Well, they set up a big container thing there, and the fuel tank had leaked underneath the school. So they braced the school up at one end, about half the school, and they dug all that fuel out and had this big machine there, mm-hmm. and they were putting the sand through there and burning all the fuel off. Then they'd bring the dirt back and put it under the school. We may have to do the same thing up there.
Right.
And I don't know who that was or whatever happened, but that's one of the things we've got to do next year.
Right.
If we can get the junk out of here this year to a great extent, then we'll get these other things next year.
Hmm.
But the other thing that happened was out at the landfill, we collected somebody's old, we collected all the old refrigerators and freezers and anything that's white we're collecting, and some of the old refrigerators and freezers had dead meat, had bad meat in it.
Oh, really?
And somehow or another, I don't know if somebody opened it or what happened, but it all spilt on the ground. Well, the fellow down here doing the crushing of the vehicles and I were walking around the landfill trying to figure out what we're going to do next and clean this up, and he goes back to work, and I come down here, and they start spraying me with Lysol Febreze because I smell so bad. Well, what it was all the odor and stuff that, and the chemical from the meat had slid down to the ground, and we were walking through it. It was terrible.
What about all the Freon then in the fridges and freezers? The
recycle company took care of all that because we didn't have anybody licensed to do that, and they did, so they took care of all that. Okay. But this. It took me, my wife wouldn't let me in the house, so I took my clothes off and put other clothes on. And then the other guy, he got back to, he's been staying in the school. He says, man, something stinks around here. He realized what it was, so he washed all his stuff in the shower. Well, it stayed for 2 days. We couldn't get all kinds of crazy things.
Good grief.
But this is where I got to go back, and we got to hopefully get somebody from some other outfit that checks soil and things, yeah. and have them come out and do all this, and we can set up a plan to
right.
get rid of that contamination.
Yeah.
You talked about various places that had closed down. Mm-hmm. So when you came up, were there a lot more businesses kind of in the Northway Junction area?
Yeah, we had in the Junction area, we had Milepost 1260. Well, if you came, we'll go back to the border, because that's only 40 miles. You had Border City Lodge was open, and you had another place called First and Last that was open. You had Scotty Creek was open, and then you came up the road, you had Seekins Roadhouse, you had Milepost 1260, Wrangleview, Stouts, and the store.
Hmm.
Okay, then nothing between here and Tok.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Today you've got Scotty Creek is partially open, Border City is open, and you got the Stores open. Everything else is gone. Gone by the wayside. People either, basically they just abandoned the property and left. And when you got, in those days, probably when they were built, you had vehicles stopping all the time for this, that, and the other. Well, now you can go 400 or 500 miles in your vehicle, so why stop at all these little places? Mm-hmm. So as business dwindled down, they couldn't make any money, so they left.
Right. And has that affected life in the village?
Not really. I don't think so, because over the time, like I say, the kids were moving out, mm-hmm. and the old folks are dying off. So I don't think it's affected it that much, because the store is still there.
Right.
And the gas station is
Those
still
are
there.
Those the important things.
Yeah.
For...
And at the time, the lodge was open, which has now been closed, I think, 4 years.
Yeah, it's not been that long.
Was it a source of employment for some people?
We had 12 to 15 people working there.
Right.
And now we got zero.
Right. So that's an impact, yeah. Right.
See,
there.
Because when I first got here, you had the lodge, and then you had the restaurant, mm-hmm. you had fuel for the airplanes, you had a beer joint, a liquor store, the motel. Okay, then he also had 3 or 4 apartments.
And those employed okay. a lot of local people?
Yep, it was all local people. And then across the street, you had a grocery store.
At the airport?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the airport. Mm-hmm. It was an old army barracks, so it was a good-sized store. And then, of course, that's all been gone.
So we talked about, just going back to effects and change, we talked about the dirt road, and then they chip sealed it. So mm-hmm. what effect did that have on the town? And what if, for people coming in and out and travel?
We could go faster. One of the things that happened is we're getting a lot more tourists down here just looking. Mm-hmm. And whenever I see a tourist, I stop and visit with them. And a side note from that is some of the tourists came up here and looked at what we were doing the first part of summer. Well, then they came back a couple of months later, and the change is just tremendous. It is the same place almost. So anyway, the outsiders are seeing big changes. Mm-hmm. The dirt road, the one good thing about the dirt road is if you got a person in the ambulance, they're not getting jerked around all the time while they're in the ambulance. An ambulance isn't a smooth riding machine as you might think it is. And so that was a big help there. Okay, then you had fuel trucks coming down here or these big semis to bring groceries and such. Couldn't hardly get down the road. And then as the road was improved, they also improved the bridges at Moose Creek and mm-hmm. Fish Camp, which meant bigger things could come in here, which they have at that time. So the road was a big... It was good for the residents. It was also good for economics.
So they could bring in more building supplies. Everything.
Yep. We had building supplies coming. You had bigger truck. You could get more groceries in at one time. And just the way it was, you get a liquor truck in every Friday, things like that, which is not the case anymore. So, and that brings me to another change is when you're out here long enough, it seems to me between 35 and 40. There's a big change in your life. For the ones that drink, you're going to either continue drinking or you're going to totally quit.
And that seems to be the age marker.
It's that age mark right in there. And I don't know why, but that's my experience. That's the deciding factor right there is between that age group, I'm either going to keep drinking or I'm going to quit. And a lot of them quit. Hmm.
And then what about any other type of drug abuse? Is that big in the...
We had marijuana. Uh-huh. And then last year, I think we kind of had a little bit of heroin come in. And the last 2 months, we've had a lot of meth. Really? Because we understand that there's a person outside of Toke that's not a Toke person growing it or whatever you make it in your kitchen or something. Yeah, I don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
But anyway, they're making it in their home and bringing it out. Or they have people bring it out. So that's been a real factor here just recently.
Right.
So we'll see.
Right. We were talking, Barbara and I, earlier this morning about river travel.
Mm-hmm.
So just because Louis Frank's going out tomorrow on his boat to collect berries as opposed to going out on a road somewhere. So has river travel in the summertime always been big in this community?
I don't think it has been. Okay. It's been a factor to some of them.
Mm-hmm.
But in the, I'm thinking in the early 1900s, they used to have a ferry come in here.
Oh,
or a steamboat come in here. And that's how Northway became Northway. It was a steamboat captain's last name.
So where would the steamboat come from?
I don't know.
It was on the Tanana River.
Yeah. Okay.
And they I guess they brought supplies in and things like that because no road. And then when that when the road came in, then it pretty much dropped down to just personalized boating. The main boating I've seen is when they go down to 45 minutes to Culture Camp.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got boats running all day for a week. But on a regular basis, I don't think it's used that much.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe hunting season will be another big time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we used to have a great big long wooden homemade boat come in.
Like a scow?
I'm not sure. It had big designs on the front, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I don't know if it was UAF or somebody. And they would travel the old style down the river. And they'd paddle this big long thing. And there'd be about 20 of them on it. And then all of a sudden that disappeared. So I don't know if they're still doing that or not. But basically, I would say maybe not much boating going on. Minor fishing from the boating and limited hunting. Not very much.
And not very many fish camps anymore?
No, not. I don't think so.
Was there many when you first arrived?
It was, one, two, maybe four.
Hmm.
But see, folks aren't, we got very few people trap anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They went to fish wheels.
Mm-hmm.
They go down to where the fish wheels are.
Do they fish on the copper then?
I think so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now Howard's one of them that does that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the fellows that used to do a lot of that have all passed away. And we had one fellow that would come up. He'd go down there and get all the salmon, and then he'd come out and stop at everybody's house and give a salmon.
Bring it back and share.
Yeah, he'd share everything.
Yeah.
And then he passed away over the frying pan over his head, a cast iron frying pan. So his life ended rather early. And
no one picked up and continued that tradition.
No. I think now basically you go down and do it, and then... pretty much get what you need, that's it.
Do it as an individual activity.
You may do it as a close family thing,
right?
But that's about
but
it.
But the sharing in the community
is
gone. And I take it that would be the same with hunting. If someone got a moose, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our moose population has increased the last few years. But again, our population has dropped way down. When I first got here, we had 450 people. Now we're down about 160. And we're talking, another girl was telling me that there's going to be five, six, maybe eight more people moved to Tok. And they're looking for work.
And that's why they're leaving.
Yeah. And they're basically looking for something for work where they can have more things for their family than they got right now.
Right.
And I don't know if anybody else is moving. We lost... I think we lost 22 people between May and June.
This year?
Yep.
Just all moved out for employment opportunities.
One fellow bought a home and got a good deal and took on a house for him and his family moved. There was six of them right there. He works at the weather station. And he drives back and forth, but they don't work in the summertime as such. He's mainly all winter. So anyway, but that family moved out. And then we've had... several young folks moved to Fairbanks and the rest to Anchorage.
And is there a feeling when these people are moving that they don't want to move, but this is inevitable in what they have to do, or is it...
I think they kind of want to move.
Okay.
Because we're in a electronic age now, and we have no cell phone service here. And that's not a big deal to me, but it is to the kids coming up because that's their lifestyle.
And internet? Is the internet...
Internet works here most of the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Real slow, but it does work.
Yeah.
And then you have the little iPod things, whatever they are. They use those.
Mm-hmm.
But with no cell phone service and things like that. It's just like all the villages are kind of drying up. Yeah. And then, well, the other employment I mentioned, I didn't think about, was the FAA. Mm-hmm. Basically, but the one fellow moving to Tok, I don't think they hire any local people. I think they're all out of Tok. Hmm. And the reason being is nobody here will go take the test.
Drug and alcohol test?
No, the FAA weather test.
Weather testing.
Yeah, the weather testing.
Which I hear is quite difficult.
Yeah, it is. It's a pretty, pretty tough deal.
Yeah, I've heard that.
You can study for it, but again, who wants to sit down and study when you go do video things?
Well, I've heard even when you study, sometimes you have to write it 4 and 5 times. It's a really, really difficult test.
It's extremely difficult.
Yeah.
And but it pays well. The job, I think at the minimum, is like $30 an hour.
But then they're also closing a bunch of the smaller stations, too.
Yeah. Now, our station is open, I think it may be 1 May through the end of August.
Oh, so you're not all year round?
No, not anymore. Now, that was a big change. Years ago, we had 16 FAA families living here.
Really?
Yep. And when they moved, of course, that was a big drop in the school there. But it caused... you know, they had we had the one restaurant, we had the airport going, we had two grocery stores going, plus all the other stuff. Well, then all of a sudden, boom, that 16 houses, figure 2 people per house, 38 people there. Lyle had 5 kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're looking at maybe 70, 80 people there.
Right.
And that was a big loss here. So, and then they bid all the houses off,
mm-hmm.
and that removed the whole deal from here.
Mm.
So the only real employment we have now as such would be a long-term benefit program, be the DOT.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they hire 5 or 6 people.
And then the tribal offices, how many people are employed here?
Basically, I think it's 2 people in the office, and everybody else is either TCC or IGAP grants.
Okay.
Chad and I are IGAP grants.
Right.
The behavioral health girl,
mm-hmm.
and this other lady, she does appointments for old people and things. Mm-hmm. I think they're both TCC. Tribal court, I'm not sure if that's TCC or who that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ASAP well before lady, that's TCC.
Right. So even though it looks like a big office with lots of people in here.
Yeah. We got about 6 to 8 people here, but there's only 2 paid by the village, I think.
Right.
And then you got next door, you got the cook.
Mm-hmm.
My son's the cook. And we've never had more than 4 people eating lunch there or breakfast, and maybe 7 takeouts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's feeding more people now than he do in Tok.
So he does the Olin program?
Yeah, he does the Olin. And I think that's, I don't know if that's TCC or who runs that. But the Tok people are talking about coming up here for lunch.
So every day he cooks and it goes out
he
to
cooks,
the elders'
he
home?
Cooks, he cooks lunch Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Breakfast on Friday, and then they go to Tok on Wednesday.
Oh.
And then since all the seniors are going to Tok on Wednesdays, there are a lot of from Dot Lake, Tanacross, mm-hmm. you know, the mm-hmm. whole local area. 3 Bears gives a 10% discount if you're over 60.
On that day.
Yeah, right. On that day. Okay. So it gives the elders, since they're in Tok, they can buy their groceries and ride back on the bus, and it's no hardship to them to a point.
Right.
So and then the bus driver is young enough to, he helps get the groceries on the truck,
mm-hmm.
or 3 Bears will help put them on, things like that.
So is it once a week then that the bus goes?
Once a week, yeah.
Right.
Yep, once a week.
Now, did it used to go in more often, or?
No.
No, it's always been
as far as I know, it's always been once a week.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But they were getting fed at the airport.
Uh-huh.
And that closed down. Then they were getting fed up at Wrangleview. Was it Wrangleview?
When they
I think they were getting, yeah, I think they were getting fed up there, and that closed down. And now they're back down there, down here.
Right.
So. But they're still eating. Now that takes disabled, that takes senior citizens. I think the village council voted to make it 55 and older.
Okay.
And then you've got disabled,
mm-hmm.
And if I go over there and eat, I can take a guest with me. So you get good population.
And is there a large disabled community here then, Tom?
It's kind of hard to figure because we've got one guy in a wheelchair, but he goes to, his family takes him to Fairbanks, he lives there for a while, then he goes down to his daughter's in Mentasta.
Okay.
But if we got, there's one there, two, three, four. I'd say less than 10, maybe 8. That really need help.
Right.
And that are either in wheelchairs or on crutches. Oh, we got one young girl and her boyfriend, they're both disabled. Mm. And they're, I don't think they're in their 30s yet.
Please.
So, and one of my plans was last year to take this lake and put trout in it. And then we put a little ramp out there, and then the people in wheelchairs and can't go much, they could come out here and enjoy fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could send your kids over here to go fish and not worry about something going on. So Fish and Game from wildlife, from Fairbanks came down, and the lake doesn't freeze to the bottom, but there's not enough oxygen in the water that's left to keep the fish alive, so they said, you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that ended that deal.
Right.
But we got about that many elders, I think. And then the bus driver goes around, picks them up every day, and then on Wednesday, of course, takes them to Toke.
So then, what's the vision for the village, or does the village have a vision for carrying on in the future?
Well, my thought is, and I've been working with the state DOT to give us the airport, because it's in five different leases. It's little sections of property. You got the hangar on one piece, you got something else on the other piece, and you got the lodge on another piece. And you can't get it unless you have all, you take the whole thing. Well, the first year, it was a $10,000 minimum bid. Nobody in the world applied for it. The second year, it went to $200. Nobody applied for it. They did have a couple Chinese people come out and look and never came back. Well, what I'm trying to get them to do is let us have one lease at a time.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we take the hangar. That's what we want. We put our school buses in there, which means we can put the fire trucks back in the fire hall, and then we can set up take our village mechanic, set up a little village mechanic shop, and then work a deal with him, and he can do both private and village stuff. He can rent the place out and then do some little things there. Then we get that running. Then we move over to the lodge. Then we start redoing the lodge and take one step at a time. Well, the lady finally wrote me back after I'd been bugging her for over a year. And she sent my information over to Airport Leasing. And I want them to come down here and sit down with us and let's get this thing going again. And my stand was, we lost 12 to 15 people that we could put back to work, which means in order for us to do that, we have to have people move in. Okay, if they got to move in, then you got to give us some housing. See, so the whole plan is to build up, and who knows, maybe it'll work.
Mm-hmm.
But we get that going again, and then Fort Wainwright used to have helicopters flying in here, and they fly on the training, but this was a refueling point. Mm-hmm. You get four helicopters in here and sell 8,000 gallons of gas, you're doing pretty good. Well, then we'd make it with Fort Wainwright and get that connection going again. They can barely use the airstrip at Tanacross for fire prevention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if that is a disaster, why not move it up here?
Mm-hmm.
We got a place, we got upstairs the fire hall, the forest people can use that. We'll have fuel, we got a maintenance shop, and now we got all the fire. So there's a good possibility we could do something. Some of the board members are in on it, but we can't do anything until DOT says, okay, let's try it. And all I'm saying is, let us try it. And the other reason was, well, we lost 12 to 15 jobs, and then how much tax dollars has the state lost? That's my big point, but I made it second. And then it's still a customs checkpoint. Okay, if you have a small plane and you can't make it to Fairbanks, you've got to stop here. Okay, you stop here in the wintertime. It's dark. No telephone, no fuel.
Nothing, no services at all.
No service at all.
Yeah.
And so let's change the image. Coming into Alaska, you're mad because you have no service. Let's change the image. Mm-hmm. So I got three or four board members that are now kind of getting rid of it. Hopefully, we can start doing some. Mm-hmm. Just waiting on the state.
We noticed there's a helicopter flying in and out behind mm-hmm. the store. What's that all about?
None of us know. They're something. They've been out for over a week. They're doing something at the border.
Oh.
But when you go drive back up here, their truck blocks the driveway into the RV park. They've rented the whole RV park, and the helicopter lands in there, and they all got all their tents up.
Yeah.
But we don't know what's happening.
You know, I saw an article in the paper, and that they're, and I don't know if it's here, but I did see an article in the paper that they're clearing the border strip. I mean, they kind of periodically clear the border.
Yeah, we've heard that too.
Strip.
But if they're working down at the border, why didn't they go down there at Border City, which has a little bit better arrangement? You're only 2 minutes away, and so that's the question. Now, if that's what they're doing, why are they here?
Yeah.
And it does provide a little bit of income for the store and things like that, but it doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I guess it does because the government's involved in it. I'm nasty.
Huh.
But
yeah.
See, I'm trying to think what else.
Yeah, any other significant changes that you've seen or changes in people?
No.
In social structure?
Not really. I don't think things change that much.
Not much. Not that fast.
The attitude of the young people that have moved
mm-hmm.
is they don't want to come back.
Right.
They don't want to put up with all this big expense of potlatches and things like that. They basically have a few friends, but they're not connected like they used to be. It's not like they don't like us. They just got more involved in other things, and they're realizing that they've got to make a house payment or apartment rent. They've got power. You know, go down your list of bills,
yeah.
and they can't come out here and do things. Now they last weekend they did a baseball tournament,
mm-hmm.
and all the kids from Fairbanks and Anchorage showed up because they're all doing something they like to do together, and they had I think they're even selling sandwiches and things up there, but it lasted Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and so all the kids kind of had like a reunion type thing, which was nice, but other than that. Poof, they're all gone.
But it's not like planned, like every 2 years we're going to go back and have a reunion.
No.
It's not that structure.
No, nothing like that.
Right.
So we got, we still have a high cancer rate.
I was going to ask about that.
And let's see, Brady, they determined, they think he's got brain cancer or is going into brain cancer.
Brady Jimmy. Brady Jimmy.
And then, you got Julia, Sam. I forgot who all, there's so many of them. Mary Ann Albert. And then you had, there's a bunch more, but it's, some are getting cleared up and some aren't.
Have you noticed an increase in the cancer rate since
No.
you've moved here? It's always been fairly high?
It was high for a while, but then as people moved away, of course, it dropped down.
Right.
But another thing I've noticed is whether you live here or whether you moved here, you both get cancer. So is it something that happened outside and you brought it with you, or is it the water we're drinking, or you know, whatever?
Are they consistently the same type of cancers too, or are they very different?
Well, probably the majority is probably lung cancer and kidney cancer.
Right.
Lung cancer because of heavy smoking.
Okay.
And in my case, it was different because I had Agent Orange cancers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I brought mine with me. But we had other people that moved in here had cancer from the various things. And so that's when they got involved in checking the water.
Mm-hmm.
Now somebody does, and they checked the water all around the airport, basically, because that's where most of your contamination was at. When you get that real twisty road right by FAA,
mm-hmm.
okay, if you look down, you'll see some wider black pipes come out of the ground.
Okay.
And that's where they're checking stuff. And then on the other side of the, you pass the airport and up in that area, just not very far, like maybe 100, 200 feet, you'll see some others sticking up and they're checking all that area. And now also, across the street from the post office, you'll see a road going off to the left. Mm-hmm. Well, that used to be the old dump area back in there in 80. And it appears that that whole area, maybe the water's getting better. Mm. Well, if that's the case, then why isn't the water getting better somewhere else? Mm-hmm. So what's happening? Don't know.
Right. And then you said that they weren't actually checking the water around.
No, I don't know of any of these groups that come in to check the water right here. And the only thing that the time we did have the water checked here was for the air for the fish, mm-hmm. and that was it. And then the school and the water well down here, you have to send the sample in every month. Mm. It has to get checked here or filled up here in their bottles and be in the station by 24 hours later. Mm-hmm. So what happens is they do the samples early in the morning. Then Terry drives down to 40 Mile Air, and 40 mm-hmm. Mile Air flies into Fairbanks, so we're well within the time frame.
Right. So, and then you get reports back very
quickly. Yeah, and then we get a written report back, and he keeps a copy of it. They keep a copy here, and then we post it on the bulletin boards, which is required.
Right. And people understand what they're reading in the well reports? Because where I'm
from,
one time that happened, and a whole community got very ill, and they were all posted, but nobody understood what they meant.
Yeah, you get all these little abbreviations of things, and I don't think any of us know what it is.
Right.
So, but the water at the school, you can actually sometimes smell the water, the phosphorus or something in it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't drink any water at school. We got our water from Toke, and we put in little water stations, water coolers, and that's where you get your water. But and my stand on that one is, if we can't drink the water at the school, then why are you cooking in it?
And
why are we doing the dishes in it,
it,
and why are we washing in it?
Brushing our teeth with it.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, that brings up a thing when you mentioned teeth. We used to do a fluoride program here, and I got to check on that and see why we're not doing it. I'm always checking things that are none of my business. But I want the community to be a good community. Anyway, we cut out the fluoride business a while back. The kids used to get it once a month at school. Well, now they haven't been getting it. We got a whole bunch of kids with no teeth that aren't even in school yet. They're not getting any fluoride whatsoever.
Right.
But they are drinking lots of Kool-Aid.
And the sweet stuff.
And these goofy zippy cups.
Yeah.
And they kind of think that's a lot of it. Is it between the Kool-Aid, or the not necessarily Kool-Aid, but
it's a sugar content.
Is there a Powerade or something?
It's the sugar content.
Yeah, it's the sugar content of all these drinks, and it's just
running their teeth out.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. They when I first got here, a real strange thing was the kids were eating cereal, mm-hmm. but they're putting water on it because they didn't like milk. Well, over the years now, they're drinking milk, and the milk is on the cereal. So I guess it's just how you're raised.
Yeah.
And change has taken place.
Right.
But other than that, I can't think of different changes. The big drawback is we're just losing so many people, we can't do it. And my whole goal is let's do something to get the community back up going again.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. Now here, this house over here is getting some sinkholes in it. Flossie's house over there is getting some sinkholes in it. And let's see, if you go back up by Kelly Frank's, where Kelly Frank lives, the back of his place, the ground is going away. And then when you pass the purple house, and you see a big water opening, and you look, you see a log house there with all kinds of styrofoam and wood in the water. Okay, that's being eaten away by the river.
Hmm.
And underneath the water about this far is a 500-gallon fuel tank. Hmm. And we don't know if the water washed it away or it mm-hmm. fell in. Now it's upright, so I'm thinking maybe it fell in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's been there for years, so I don't know if it had fuel in it when it left, but I wanted to pull it out last year, and the guy said I couldn't come on his property. And I said, that's no problem to me. This is a free service. DEC will come down, and it ain't going to be free. And since then, he's changed his citizenship. He's now a Canadian citizen.
Hmm.
But then I got thinking, if I'm standing on Northway Road and he doesn't own the water, I'll run a cable from the road over to the tank and pull it out that way. We're going to get out one way or the other this year.
So the slumps are interesting. What's causing that? The warmer climate?
We think it's the permafrost melting, mm-hmm. and it's causing all these big holes to take place. And it's a shift in the house a little bit, which usually on permafrost anyway, but we're seeing some different type of results here. Yeah. And like the ground slid away in the highway, that might have been some of it. Mm-hmm. If you go back to 1260, a guy at the border bought 7 acres back in there. He thinks he can still put a house up there, but there's great big sump holes all over that property. And we think it's the, I think Alaska's, this area has gained 9 degrees warmer over the last few years. And the permafrost is melting, and that's causing all this.
That's what I was just going to ask. You mentioned you came up and it was minus 50.
58.
The winters certainly aren't as cold as that anymore.
No. My coldest day out here, I think, was 68 below. Yeah. And then I don't think we even hit 50 below last year. Mm-hmm. And the year before that, we only hit 50 below twice. So that was good. And I can't hardly wait for this winter to see what's going to happen.
And spring's coming earlier. And,
yeah. And it seems like, it almost seems like out here where the winters are going into May, but the summer's going into October. Mm-hmm. It's like we're almost changing the cycle here. But I think a lot of it is it's just getting warmer. And then Fairbanks newspaper had a great big full page thing on the Arctic, where so much of it's melted away and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yukon River's melting, the banks are melting away, so we're getting the fix here too.
Right. Hmm. Have you ever, just getting back to the Wrangell-St. Mm-hmm. Elias area, have you ever gone mm-hmm. down that way? No.
No, never been that
never
way.
Never done.
I'm too busy here to do anything. It's just crazy.
I just thought we'd ask.
No, never have.
Yeah. And as you said, local people just aren't going out and trapping. And
not hunting. Like they used to, yeah. No.
What about the use of snowmobiles? Is that increased or decreased if people aren't going out and hunting?
I think we still got I'm thinking maybe 7 or 8, maybe 10 at the most. Mm-hmm. Mainly used by the kids running around or by some real trappers. I'm not sure how Howard Fix does his. He may go by snow machine, but I'm not sure. Mm. Never thought of him in that. But his daughter and her boy, the lady at the post office, yep. They go out every weekend on their snow machines, checking their traps and things like that.
Right.
Mainly, I'm thinking right now, it's just recreational type stuff, except for maybe 2 or 3 people. Mm. And one guy's too old, Dave James, mm-hmm. he's 80, I think he's 81 or 2 now. He's got 300 traps out, but they're all along the highway, so he just drives along the highway, gets out of his truck, checks, gets back in his truck, goes.
They're not back in the bush somewhere.
And he still does pretty well, mm-hmm. but he's not out there bouncing around a snow machine, that type of thing. Mm. So. You know, our price of power is just killing everybody.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you generate your own power here? Or do you
it's buy all,
it on
it's
the
all
grid?
From AT&T, yeah. And what I'm looking at now is once we get this recycle thing done, Chad's going to pick it up. And then if he'll get right back into EPA stuff, I'm going to go full steam into solar energy and biomass. And what I want to do by next summer is start seeing solar energy around here. But I went out at 51 below zero a couple of years ago. And took when you get past the Purple House and you go by a couple other places, you get that big clear area. You got the river on one side, the small creek on one side, and the big river on the other, and the little Fish Creek bridge there. Okay, the river, the creek on the left never freezes. Mm-hmm. At 51 below zero, I was out there taking pictures and sent them in to some folks. And if the water's that warm, then there's got to be a hot springs up there somewhere. And can we do something off that hot springs? Mm-hmm. That's the second thing we're looking at. Now, K&K Recycle in Fairbanks, Bernie also owns Chena Hot Springs. Well, he's got an airplane. He came down and looked into this. He got an airplane with a device underneath it. He can fly along mm-hmm. and tell the temperature of the water. And he never came back. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if he got too busy doing his things and whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's got to be something there to keep the river creek. The creek is flowing as fast at 51 below zero as it does in July. Mm-hmm. So there's got to be something there. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, if it's where I think it might be, I don't know if we could build anything out there anyway, because there's not much solid soil.
Build it like a hot springs resort type of thing is what you're thinking, or build it for warmth,
The first thing I want to do is do something with the power out of it. We put 30 cents like something a kilowatt, and then you put 34, I think, last power bill. They put in the fuel charge or something. Mm-hmm. So we're paying over 70 cents a kilowatt. Okay. Now, Becky, who teaches school, she leaves her house and she's in school at 8 o'clock by herself, and she runs her wood stove during the day. She gets home around 6 o'clock at night. Power bill is almost $400 a month. My power bill was over $600. One guy's, his was over $1,100. And these folks here, some of these houses you go in, they got one bulb burning. Everybody's over, I say, at least $150 to $1,100 a month. So that's my big thing. Right. And I'm thinking another thing, you can get a device with the river up on the highway and Moose Creek by my house and this river here, you get a device to put in the water. That's a squirrel cage thing. And it generates electricity. We could get all three areas do not freeze in the wintertime, so the current keeps flowing. Mm-hmm. That's another area we're looking at. But we got to do something with this power thing. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I take it the power plant runs off of oil?
Imagine,
yeah.
Diesel generators.
See, now, Tolk School, and I thought Northway School was part of the grant, but it didn't work out. They went to biomass, 2 years ago, maybe? And Scott put out a note that they've saved something like 55,000 gallons of fuel in 1 year. That's quite a savings. Northern Energy if you look at Northern Energy, if you go by there, they got a great big solar panel thing there. Maybe at least 100 feet long. And they get all kinds of solar energy. And then you got 40 mile air. There's right there. One house in Tanacross and one in Tolk. Well, they can do it, we can do it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See. So anyway, that's kind of the highlights of Northway, I guess.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. I just, one more question then, leading to the energy. How do most people heat their homes here then?
In
the
wood.
But they have an oil backup? Or,
yeah. Last winter, I haven't checked yet, last winter fuel was $4.40 a gallon. Mm-hmm. Well, if you got a 200-gallon tank, most people here can't afford $900 a refill. So the boys are going out and cutting wood for $150 a load, and they're really stacking their trucks up. So the main source, I think, still is wood. And then we got the fuel backup, and then two of us have pellet stoves. Mm-hmm. But I've got a regular home furnace and a pellet stove and the wood stove. Because if the power goes out, I've lost my main furnace and the pellet stove. Mm-hmm. So the wood's still your best source.
Yeah.
And as long as I got three boys living at home, they're cutting it and chopping it and stacking it in the house. So they can earn their keep. But that house over there has fell apart, but that's empty. Mm-hmm. House across the street is empty. Lee Northray's house is empty. Another house is empty up on the highway. One here. We've got seven or eight houses that could be rentable, but they won't rent them out. Mm-hmm. See, so if we have an influx of people wanting to work here, if something does develop, I've got to convince the folks, let's rent this stuff out. Because I don't think... Is it IRA builds the houses, I guess? I don't think we just call it, hey, build 10 houses tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes years to do this stuff. But we do have seven or eight places that could be available with minor fixing up.
Yeah, if you let them go too long, they're going to need major fixing up, and then it's...
Well, if you leave them too long, you get two types of residents, bats and squirrels, and neither one of them are any good for housing. So.
Well, I hope you're successful.
Well, I hope we're all successful for the benefit of everybody here.
Yeah, and I hope you can get this water. This is like a pint jar, and about a third of it is sediment, and the other two-thirds is a brownish water.
Mm-hmm. We could take a picture.
True.
See, what I'm wondering is that we know the well water is good.
Yeah.
But if the water truck leaves the water in there, then what's happening in there, and what about the hose?
Hello
there.
Sorry to interrupt. How long are you going to be?
I think we're about done.
We can say thank you.
Okay, because Donna's on the phone, and she's called three times, and I've put her off. And
okay.
Well, Tom, we'll say thank you very much.
We'll get that one next. Okay.
Tom, thank you for your time. We really appreciate sharing your memories with us.